There is, of course, several things that tie this program together. One is the fact that there are three very Russian composers, and it doesn't get much more Russian than Prokofiev, Rachmaninoff, and Shostakovich. But there's also the fact that that it's first, you know, first concerto, first symphony, first concerto, first symphony. But there's even a more deep connection with the fact that these are three works that these composers wrote very early on, or even as graduation pieces.
Some before they left Russia. Prokofiev and Rachmaninoff both left. One of them came back, but...
Yes, yeah.
And then Shostakovich, I believe, who...
Shostakovich never left.
Never left.
But
right.
This the Shostakovich Symphony was a piece that he wrote as a graduation piece, and so Prokofiev. And what's incredible is how good they are for that, and how already affirmed into their own language. And, you know, each one is a very different example of totally different things. You know, the Prokofiev is almost an academic exercise in writing a symphony by Haydn in the 20th century. So writing a symphony with a form, with a supposed tonality, and with everything in its place by a 20th century composer. But what's fun about it is that there are many, many wrong things. Tonalities are wrong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like something that's very academic while it's completely not like that.
And very tongue-in-cheek, I think.
Very tongue-in-cheek. It's humorous. Really kind of paying homage to the humor of Haydn and to the liberties that Haydn took with his music. And Prokofiev, of course, has a different set of liberties, and he takes it a virtuosic piece for everyone. Really, everyone who plays is tested at the most technically. The first concerto by Rachmaninoff is unfortunately much lesser played than the second and third, or even than the Paganini Rhapsody, or the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini. And I say unfortunately because it is incredibly interesting piece, incredibly difficult, incredibly attractive, and also rhythmically very bold, very interesting, kind of forward-looking concerto. And Alexander Korsantia is really one of the most gifted pianists that I've ever worked with. I just did with him Shostakovich first piano concerto, which is the one with trumpet solo and strings, and oh my god, what, you know, what a technique. He is from Georgia in old Soviet Union, and now today is in the faculty of New England Conservatory. Young guy, very, very full of humor and very interesting. I think people will love him here. And, you know, this first piano concerto of Rachmaninoff is kind of a victim of the popularity of the other piano concertos. If he would never have written those two mammoth blockbuster pieces, maybe we would consider the first piano concerto a more important piece than it is.
Thank you.
But like a lot of his early works, he believed in it.
I mean, yeah.
He wrote it in 1889 or 90, but then he revised it into a form that he thought was more acceptable and pleasing. And, you know, whether or not the audience liked it, he certainly thought that it was complete at that point.
You know, and he had this attitude with more than this piece, because his first symphony was a complete disappointment for the audience, and it was considered a flop, and he was distraught. He was really destroyed from this experience. Till later in his life and career, already in the United States, where he kind of revisits that piece and says, you know, this is a much better piece than really anybody gives it credit. And in his real last piece in the symphonic variations, he quotes for the first symphony at the end of the first movement in a very beautiful moment, kind of saying, okay, here I am at the top of my game, and here is a quote of my great symphony, so that posterity looks at it in a different light. And he was right. Today, the First Symphony is a piece that is played and that is admired and by many people revered. So the same thing happened to him with his first piano concerto. So Rachmaninoff was as much a composer as he was a performer. You know, people, yeah, legendary performer and legendary huge hands, you know? So that's why everything he wrote for piano is so stretched and so difficult, because he could, they say, very easily play it. And you can hear his recordings. But this first piano concerto, for some reason, is, to me, seems even more virtuosic than the other ones. And so there must have been a reason also in that light, in the sense that it didn't catch on because it was so, so hard. And that immediately after he wrote one piece, which is the second concerto, which of course is hard, yes, but it is not as hard as the first one.
Well, I think as his career went on and he became known not only as composer and pianist, but conductor.
Yes.
Perhaps early in his career, he maybe thought of himself as a pianist first and then composer.
Yes.
Later, he was composer first and then pianist.
Mm-hmm.
As he grew or aged.
Yes.
You know, and also started conducting more, and perhaps had less time for practicing piano.
Yeah.
As he was doing more conducting.
Yeah.
But from the very beginning, it just sounds like that's Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
Brass fanfare,
yes,
the piano opening, and then the orchestra catching up with the piano after that. I think almost all of his piano concerti begin with something along that manner.
Uh-huh.
A big statement, the piano comes in, and then the orchestra,
yes,
joins in. So, like you said, although it's an early work and different from the second as far as technique goes, he seems to have already established his concerto writing style.
Correct.
Even in this very early work.
Yes. You can connect that with the Shostakovich Symphony, because what's astounding about the Shostakovich Symphony is how already individual a voice that is, you know? And I mean, Shostakovich was really very, very young when he wrote the first symphony. And we know today he wrote 15 symphonies. And, you know, there are some that are more famous than others and some that are clearly better than others. But the first one, nobody argues with its quality, nobody argues with its interest, and nobody argues with its originality and individuality. And it's Shostakovich stamped his presence with that piece and got nothing but rave reviews. And the first symphony does not at all sound like the symphony of a beginner or of somebody who's learning. It sounds like somebody who has a distinct voice. And one of the most fascinating things, I actually just finished a year of doing all 15 symphonies of Shostakovich, is to see how each one shows an interesting voice progression and search, in some cases. After the first one, the second and third are really explorations and sometimes quite weak explorations, but into a territory that would then open into something great, like the fourth symphony, which is very Mahlerian. And then everyone knows the fifth, and it's perhaps one of his most individual, but also one of his most symphonic, in the sense that it adheres to a very clear form. There are great symphonies by Shostakovich. One of them we're doing next season, 14. I mean, 14 is a complete non-symphonic piece that's called a symphony. It's a set of poems with a great orchestral part, but for a dozen musicians, period. And so interesting to see that one of the most important composers of symphonies of the 20th century, at least, you know, in quality and in number, starts with such a great first symphony. There are not so many examples of great first symphonies, you know. Brahms is clearly one.
When he was also middle-aged.
Yes.
Shostakovich, on the other hand, entered the conservatory when he was 13.
Yes.
And I think perhaps if Mozart had been born in Russia in 1906, he would have turned into Shostakovich. Both
yes.
Very precocious talents, both very confident in their writing.
Correct.
At an
very
early
confident.
Age.
Yes.
At least the first half of the symphony, I think he called Symphony Grotesque, perhaps tongue-in-cheek looking at the tradition which he had learned, but he was perhaps also already breaking from it. To me, it seems kind of playful.
Playful, but with sarcasm already, you know? And it's got this kind of already is search for a solemnity or ominousness in music, you know, this kind of, as a young man, you know, he's looking at his future and there's a lot of darkness in there.
I think that darkness sort of started early in his career when he moved to Moscow and couldn't get enough work.
Yeah.
That was a very early disappointment.
Yeah.
He was witnessing tragedy around him, but also a personal.
Correct.
At least the fear of failure.
Yeah.
And not being able to find anywhere to stay, any way to make money that he thought that he would have been.
Yeah.
And for that to happen to a teenager, basically, had to be something of a frustration, you know, knock on the head, something, you know, to say, you're not here yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
the music is fun, it's happy, but there is this kind of soul in there that signals difficult things. It's not like Tchaikovsky, where there is this already in this music, this kind of growing depression. Okay, no, in the Shostakovich is this kind of witnessing and writing into music something he witnesses as very dark. And if somebody doesn't believe that that's true, you can look at the progression between symphonies number 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. It gets darker and darker, and what he is witnessing is more and more and more tough, to the point where he reaches a symphony, which is symphony number 14, where we're talking about all poems who have as a theme death. Okay, so almost like saying the only way out of this situation is to talk about death, you know, in a very sarcastic way. So there's a symphony right before number 13 where the topic is poetry about anti-Semitism, which has been a talked about but not enough talked about topic in Russia in the 20th century. The fact that Russia has been or was as anti-Semitic and as difficult with its Jewish population almost as the Germans were in the Second World War. Stalin, and not only Stalin, the situation of anti-Semitism is a very, very tough topic in Russia. And Shostakovich talks about it directly through the words of Yevtushenko, this great poet who is still alive. So all these things are already brooding in the mind of a young man. And there are pictures of Shostakovich around the time of the first symphony, and he doesn't look at all as a young man who is looking forward to a great life of success. He looks as a young man who is already inside a very serious and important, personality, almost possessed with a voice of his people.